Welcome to His Needs, Her Needs, one of my favorite books written by Willard Hartley. And I liked the book originally because of the cover. Then I liked the book secondly because of the name of the guy who wrote it, Willard Hartley. You got to like a guy named Willard. And so with a last name like Hartley, pretty good, pretty good. So we're glad you're here this morning. We do have two parts. The first part, we do get into some age-appropriate material, and the second part, not so much, and I believe it'll be a help. We're glad that you could find your way here today. The subtitle is Building an Affair-Proof Marriage. So here's the book itself, and by the way, let me go ahead and second what Brother Shore said about a couple of those books he just mentioned. One of the greatest books that I'm reading right now for the second time is Financial Peace. You just showed that book, right, Brother John? Brother Shore, Pastor Shore, you just showed the Financial Peace, right? Yeah, Financial Peace by Dave Ramsey. You can pick that in the bookstore. Isn't that correct, Ms. Cherry? Okay, so pick up that book. Great book, Financial Peace. It has been a real help to my wife and I. It's been a real help to some people in our church as well. And if you find yourself having struggles and fights in your marriage, and if you don't, good for you. But if you ever have I'd like to talk with you afterward, you know, and if you ever have a fight or something, sometimes it can be about money. And my wife and I found that's quite often the case, because, you know, hey, I'm trying to save up so that we can do a little family vacation, and she wants to spend it on foolish things like diapers and formula. I don't know what she's thinking, you know, so sometimes we have fights about financial things, and that book, we've both been reading it together. That book has really put us on the same page on some financial issues, and that is a wonderful read, and I hope you'll take the opportunity to read that. So there you go. I make no profits off of the sale of that book. I'm just figured I'd talk about it. Okay, let's go talk. So this is the book that we're looking at, though. Willard Hartley's bestseller, His Needs, Her Needs. Willard Hartley has written several good books. This is, I believe, his best. And so we're going to share that one. The subtitle is Building an Affair-Proof Marriage. And if you're under the assumption that in your relationship, in your marriage, an affair is impossible, then you are gravely mistaken. It is always possible to fall into sin. And the reason it is because we are sinners by nature. And also we are sinners by choice. And although God has saved us from that sin nature, and although God has given us an opportunity to do the right thing, sin does happen and affairs do happen and people make mistakes. And in doing that, ruin lives, ruin the lives of your children, ruin the life of your family and those people who are looking to you as an example. An affair is a horrible thing, a death for any relationship, and really can ruin a lot. Now, let me say this as we begin. Maybe perhaps in your relationship an affair is already taking place. Let me say this, that you still have hope, and the Lord can still heal, and the Lord can still help your relationship, and the Lord can bring that back together. What you need is time with the Lord. You need time with one another, and you need good counseling. You have an obligation to go to your pastor and to talk with your pastor if a situation like that occurs. I recently had somebody come to me and say, Pastor Tice, we want to renew our vows. And I said, that's fine. But it was odd because this is the third time they want to renew their vows. And I asked, I said, well, why would you want to do this? Well, Pastor, I don't want to get into it, but I just feel like it's necessary that we renew our vows again. And I said, well, what's the occasion? No special occasion. I just feel bad about something. We need to renew our vows again. And sometimes people feel awkward about going to their pastor to talk with them about a situation like this. And that really shouldn't be the case. You can't sweep these things under the rug. You need to approach them head on. And so if you have gone through something like that and that struggle in your life, I believe there's some great ways to handle that. By reading some good books, by spending time with the Lord, reading the Word of God, and talking to your pastor, getting some good counseling. But this is talking about what to do beforehand. What can we do to keep an affair from happening in our relationship? And so how to affair-proof your marriage? Let's talk about that. Number one, can we see that? Oh, boy. Well, we're going to be all right. How to affair-proof your marriage. And if you can't see the PowerPoint, that's all right. I'm going to talk slowly this morning. The Bible says in 1 Peter 3, verse 7, likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge. This is going to be our key text for our study in the next two lessons. The Bible says, dwell with them according to knowledge. This is speaking to the wife. Wives, speaking to the husband. Husband, dwell with your wife according to knowledge. Know her. I don't believe that the Lord would be too upset if we applied this to the wife as well. Wife, know your husband. Live with your husband. Understand him. And that, by the way, was what our session was about last night. Talking specifically about the five love languages, knowing your spouse and how to communicate to them. Here we're going to be talking about his needs. It's important, ladies, that you know your husband's needs and that you're willing and able to fulfill them. And men, it's important that you know your wife's needs and you're willing and able to meet those needs. The writer of the book says this: you can have a happy marriage if you learn to become aware of each other's emotional needs and learn to meet them. And this is really the premise of the entire book. You know, when a man agrees to marry a woman, he's doing so under the assumption that this woman is going to meet all of his needs. And when a woman marries a man, she's doing so under the assumption that he is going to meet all of her needs. We may have convinced ourselves that the primary reason we want to get married to this individual is because I'm going to marry this person to make that person happy. But the truth is, and we've learned at the dad's first session on Thursday night, the reason we get married is because we feel like that person's going to make me happy. And one of the greatest ways that you can look at your marriage is a way of saying, okay, this person married me so that I can make them happy. How can I make them happy? Let's look at number one. Number one, his needs are not always hers. His needs are not always hers. Goodness. His needs are not always her needs. Now, what I want you to do is go ahead and do this. We're going to read through these, and don't start right away. I'm going to read through these. Here are the 10 basic needs that we're going to look at this morning. There's admiration, affection, conversation, domestic support, family commitment, financial support, honesty and openness, physical attractiveness, recreational companionship, and sexual fulfillment. These are the 10 basic needs we're going to go ahead and look at. And what I want you to do is, for a couple minutes here, or just a couple moments, put these in order of importance to you, not to your spouse, but to you, in order of importance. Now, don't look at your spouses. It's important that you do this individually on your own. What would be most important to you of these 10? If you would say my greatest emotional need, the greatest need in my relationship with my spouse are these 10, which would be the most important? The most important, put the number one. The second most important, put the number two. The third most important, put the number three, and so on, all the way down to 10. This will take you a few moments, and we're not going to rush you because I believe this is very important to understand where we're going with this. Go ahead and take this opportunity. How many of you already have this done? Raise your hand. All right. How many of you did this before the class started? Raise your hand. You got the notes. Okay, a couple of you did. All right. All right, we're going to give you a moment. Yeah, I'll take your watch. I can't see it. I'm not tall enough. That's a nice watch, Pastor Shaw. Well, they pay you around here. Make a lot of money. Very nice. Do you see that? I might hold on to that later. Do you really like the Chicago Cubs, sir? I'm sorry. Yeah, we'll see. For the last 100 years, we'll see. Yeah. This is the year for the Cubbies. How many of you believe that's true? Yeah. My friend, you are a deluded man. My brother has nothing to do with this conversation. My brother. I'll tell you about my brother. One of these days we're going to have a session called My Brother. And I'm just going to tell you all about him. Somebody just said, Brother Bill just said he was talking about me last night. I don't doubt it. My brother has serious issues. Oh, his issues go far beyond sports and recreation. For example, no, I'm not going to go. Oh, goodness gracious. Are we done? Are we done? Good job. All right. Let's go ahead and go through these. Admiration, affection, conversation, domestic support, family commitment, and on and on. I'm not going to ask you to read yours aloud. That would be revealing yourself emotionally maybe a little too much. But it's important for you to see yours. Now, what I want you to do is go ahead and look at your spouses. And I want you to go ahead and compare. You may have already done this. Compare and see where they may have put their needs different compared to your needs. Go ahead and look at your spouses. And see where they may have put. Go ahead and very first thing on your spouses, look at what they put as number one. What did they put as number one? Now, how many of you in this room say, Pastor Tice, the truth is, I knew what their number one was before I ever looked. How many of you would say that's true? Okay, so not so much. Well, this is good. This is why we're taking the class. All right, very good. And so look at each other's and check it out. And look at your spouse's least important. Number 10. They say, this is least important to me. Go ahead and look at that as well. All right, very good. Good. All right, one more premise thing that we need to go through is, what is an affair? Let's talk about what is an affair. This session is always fun. You get to write things down, look at each other's notes. We have a couple up front who said they did not match on anything. How long have you folks been married? 13 years, folks. It's okay. It's okay. They didn't match on anything, and they've been married for 13 years. You're doing fine. I think this thing is going to last. We're going to help you through it. Still happy, they don't need to match. They're all right. You don't need to match. You really don't need to match at all. The important thing is that you understand what your other's is. Now, let's go on. Let's go on and see number two here, number three here. What is an affair? What is an affair? If we're going to talk about building an affair-proof marriage, I think the definition of affair, and we're only going to be very brief on this, although I'd like to take more time. What is an affair? Number one, an affair is the obvious idea of extramarital lovemaking. And so sex outside of marriage, having any sort of sexual relationship with any other person that is not your spouse, horrible, godless sin, and a destruction to your family, of course. This is an affair. But number two, also this would be extramarital feelings of love. I believe that even feelings of love that you entertain, this is an affair. This is something that needs to be nipped, needs to be stopped, needs to be stopped right away. And by the way, you can do that through will and determination. And I believe through the power of the Lord in your life. And I also believe through counseling and talking with somebody like one of the pastors at your church, or ladies, one of the pastors' wives, or your deacons, or whoever it might be. Talk with somebody. Say, you know what? I've got to be honest with you. I begin to have these emotional reactions to somebody at work, and you need to pray for me. I don't want that to go down that road. But understand that even those beginnings of feelings of emotional attraction and love towards somebody else, entertaining those feelings, that is an affair. That is adultery. I had a man one day, so that goes on to number three. So that would be both feelings of love and lovemaking. I had a man say, well, I'm not having an affair. And he was going on to tell me, he was sitting in my office. He's going on to tell me that every week he takes this woman out to lunch and he's begun to feel love for her. And boy, she doesn't treat him the way his wife treats him. And I told him, I said, well, you realize that you are in an adulterous affair. And I just don't think things with my wife are going the way I want them to go. And she just makes me feel good. And she makes me forget about all my problems. And she doesn't worry about all the kids. And we're able to talk about other things. And he says, we haven't had sex. But Pastor, I really care for her. And I said, you're in an adulterous affair. I told him, I said, are you willing to give up this relationship? He said, no. I said, that is the definition, but I won't have sex with her. And I looked at him and I thought, I looked at him and I asked him, I said, you're kidding, right? He had truly convinced himself that he was going to have this relationship with this other woman, but he wasn't going to take it that far. I remember thinking those sort of things when you're a teenager, you see. But here's an adult man who's convinced himself he wasn't going to take it that far. And so what is an affair? An affair has anything to do with the love relationship outside of the marriage. And don't fool yourself into thinking you're some sort of a moral high ground person if you don't have sex with the person. If you walk down that road, Jesus himself said, if you think upon a woman to lust after, you've committed adultery already in your heart. And so let's be honest about it. Number three, affairs usually start with just being friends. Affairs usually start by just being friends. Can't really see it. Just being friends. Just being friends. And so here's the idea of just being friends. Somebody said, well, we're just friends. You know, my wife and I have talked about this. Some of you might think this is extreme. I don't think I'm too an extreme type of a person. But my wife and I have talked about the fact that we have friends within our church. We have friends outside of our church. But my friends are men and her friends are ladies. Now, we have friendships with couples. We get together and have a good time. But I don't really have a lot of friendships that are, in fact, I don't have any friendships with women that are not my, you know, relative. I don't say to one of the ladies in the church, I call up and say, hey, where's your husband? Oh, he's at work. I say, oh, my wife's out with the kids at the doctor. I've got nobody to go to lunch with. You want to go to lunch? That doesn't work. And there I am going, you know, I'm down at the Chipotle, me and this woman. And there you come in. You walk in the Chipotle and you're thinking, hey, there's Pastor Tyson. Is that his wife? I don't think that's his wife. And you walk up and say, hey, Pastor Tyson, everything okay? Oh, yeah. Good. I'm just having a Chipotle burrito with my friend here. There's some problems with that, obviously. And you say, oh, that's because you're a pastor. No, because that's because I'm a married man. And married men have friendships with men and their wife. And if you think you're some sort of a hero who's going to be going out there and, well, not me. I don't know. You might be some sort of a deviant who's going to take advantage of every woman that walks around. I'm friends with many women, or ladies that say, I'm friends with many men. Well, you're setting yourself up for an affair. How dare you say that? I don't care if you're offended with me. It's the truth. You need to get over the fact that you used to be Mr. Cool with all the girlfriends. And you need to get over. You got one now. And you need to get over, ma'am, the fact that you need many men's attention. You don't need many men having attention given to you. You need one. Get over it. And somebody said, you're offending me. It's a gift. it's fun. So just being friends. Number one, it starts really with this idea of first, I don't know why we have the PowerPoint. Can anybody even see these? I'm very concerned. This says first an emotional attraction. First an emotional attraction. This is how it begins. An affair begins with an emotional attraction. And have you ever, I knew a man who, and I'm not going to give their name. Let's call them Harry and Sally. Sure. Here's Harry and Sally, and Harry and Sally, I knew Harry when I was a teenager, and they were a young couple who just got married in their early 20s, and they were just cool, you know, and I thought they were just amazing, beautiful people. I mean, really, both of them. He was good looking, and she was gorgeous, and I remember thinking, well, one day I want to have a marriage just like them, and I want to marry a girl. I want to meet a girl just like her, and I just kind of respected them. They were godly people, and serving the Lord and doing the best they could. And I just really, really respected them. I found out that later they had moved to Florida. And I found out that this guy actually ended up leaving his wife. And when I found out and I got indication of who he left his wife for, I was a little shocked and surprised. Have you ever seen somebody leave their spouse and you were surprised about who they left their spouse for? And you're thinking, you know, you expected to see some sort of a supermodel or something. And the person they left their spouse for was some sort of a dog face. And I'm being kind, you know. And you're thinking to yourself, you're thinking, are you serious? You left your wife for this person? It doesn't make sense. And the reason it is because many times we get the idea that an affair begins with some sort of passionate physical attraction. And that isn't necessarily the case. Most affairs begin with an emotional attraction. For example, the husband leaves his wife at home and there's three children clinging onto her and there's throw up all over the ground and somebody had diarrhea. And you say, these are horrible words. No, these are family words. Okay. And And it's a mess, and she, you know, she hasn't been able to do her hair, and she kind of looks like she's coming out of the bedroom trying to just trying to stay alive, you know. And he says, goodbye, honey. And he walks out, and he goes to the office. And all she could do, because she's been dealing with so much, all she could do is really say not really nice things to her husband. She used to say, now, when are you getting home? You know, he said, well, I'll try to be home whenever I can get home. And well, you need to get back here and help me with these kids. Why do we have all these kids? And this is kind of the last thing he hears as he walks out the door. And boy, he's thinking, boy, you know, things aren't the way they used to be. And then he gets to the office, and there's some sweet secretary there. And, you know, she has her dress all nice and ironed, and she smells of perfume, and she's got her hair done. And she walks up, and she puts her hand on the man's shoulder and says, sir, is there anything I can do for you today? And, you know, well, what's happening here? He's maybe not be a physical attraction at all. It may be an emotional attraction of, wow, this person cares for me. This person wants to be there for me. Well, I can remember when my wife was used to be like this and this sort of thing. And so here's an emotional attraction that begins this affair. Number two, we see the second is the sexual attraction. Second, we see the sexual attraction that begins. And so from this emotional attraction begins the sexual attraction that begins to start. Number three, if you do not meet your spouse's emotional needs, somebody else will. If you do not meet your spouse's emotional needs, somebody else surely will do this. Perhaps your wife has the need of intimate conversation, and she just feels that she needs to express herself. And you yourself, you just don't like to talk. I mean, quite frankly, you've talked all day. You've done what you've needed to do. You've sold all day, whatever you sell. You've worked all day doing whatever you work, and you're just done talking. And you come home, and your wife wants to sit down and have a long conversation, and all you want to do is sit down and turn on the television. And your wife sits you down and says, honey, let's talk. Let me tell you, if you're not there to meet that emotional need, somebody else will. And sometimes she might be able to fill that emotional need by talking to her parents or maybe talking to some girlfriend. But more often than not, that emotional need will be met by some man who's out there. And that man has no problem talking to your wife because that man has ulterior motives. And he's going to sit her down and say, how are you feeling? Now, listen, that man doesn't care how she's feeling. That man doesn't care how bad her day has been. That man is trying to ruin a relationship. And so here we see, if you don't meet your spouse's emotional needs, somebody else will. Number two, let's look at this. Why your love bank never closes. Now, this is kind of a segue from our session last night into today's sessions. Why your love bank never closes. In each love bank, there are many accounts. Let me explain it this way. Your heart. Every time you meet somebody, there's a new account opened up inside of your love bank. So inside of you, you have kind of this bank. It doesn't hold money. It holds love. And every time you meet somebody, it is filled with love. Now, you make a deposit in a real bank. You open up that bank deposit with, you know, 20 or 50 or 100 bucks. You just put a little bit in there. And then you go to that bank, and whenever you need that money, you withdraw that money. But there's only so much money that you can withdraw. If you put $100 in the bank, you can only withdraw how much? All right, you don't need financial peace. You got it. All right, so you, man, that took me a long time to get that principle down. I kept with overdrawing, you know. How many of you have ever forgot about that principle? You put $100 in, you don't have more than $100 to pull out, yeah. And so, yeah, you put $100 in, you have $100 to pull out. And what happens if you do overdraw? Now, what happens if you overdraw is the bank gets mad at you. And when the bank gets mad at you, your life isn't very happy, and so you have to take care of the problem. So it is with an individual. So it is with any person. Let's say here's Joe Schmo. Joe Schmo is here, and every single one of us have the opportunity of meeting Joe Schmo. Joe Schmo comes to the church, and maybe you're a greeter, and you walk up, and you say, hey, Joe, my name is Joe, too. It's nice to meet you. The reason both are named Joe is because I'm not very creative with names, okay? So you should. If I ever write a novel, everybody's name is going to be Joe and Jane or Harry and Sally. And so here, Joe, he says, hi, my name is Joe, too. It's so nice to meet you. And Joe says, well, it's nice to meet you, too. Is this your first time to the church? Well, it sure is. And I sure like it so far. I've only seen the foyer. Well, come on in, Joe, and I'm going to show you around. And you take Joe around for 2 or 3 minutes, and you sit Joe down and say, Joe, if you need anything, let me know. My name's Joe. I'll take care of it. Well, Joe is thinking, wow, I kind of like that guy. Now, you haven't deposited a lot, but you have deposited a little bit into his love bank. When he thinks of Joe, he thinks, that's a nice guy. Now, what if Joe, after service, walked up to Joe, and Joe walked up to Joe and said, Joe, did you have a good service? He said, sure did. He said, well, we'd appreciate it if you'd never come back. Okay? Now, Joe doesn't know Joe. And Joe may be thinking, well, maybe Joe's just kidding with me. But his emotional love bank doesn't have as much in it because that was an uncomfortable situation. He walks him outside the car. He says, well, Joe, hope you had a good time. We really don't want you to come back. And by the way, and he takes his fist and he balls it up and he hits Joe right in the face. And Joe falls down. Now, I got to tell you, does Joe number one have good feelings about Joe number two? No, he doesn't. Why? Although Joe was nice to Joe, Joe received a little bit of love. But by the end of the day, the other Joe had withdrawn too much love, you see. He'd taken too many deposits out. He'd making too many withdrawals. Now, this happens in every relationship, and it's primarily, we're going to talk about it in the relationship of the husband and wife. Everyone has a love bank. In each love bank, there are many accounts. In each love bank, there are many accounts. Number two, each person makes a deposit or withdrawal whenever we interact with them. Each person makes a deposit or a withdrawal every time we interact with them. So this is the reason. Now, hear me now. This is the reason there are people you hate and people you like. The reason there are people you hate and there are people you like. Now, the people you like, every time they meet you, they have a positive interaction with you. They're depositing love into their account. If there's somebody that every time you talk with them, it's an uncomfortable situation, they're withdrawing love from their account, and you begin to hate them. All right. I'm not talking about the moral relevance of love and hate at this point. I'm just telling you that's the reason why you don't like some and you do like others, you see. And so you have a love bank probably for many people in this room. And so very important to see these. All right, let's go on. Number three, pleasurable interactions cause deposits. Let's see, I don't think we have those up there, nope. Pleasurable interactions cause deposits. And painful interactions cause withdrawals. Painful interactions cause withdrawals. Now, so we talked about that. So let's go to the husband and wife and talk about how this works. Here the husband is, and he meets this woman, and he begins to tell her how much she means to her. Boy, you're just so beautiful, and boy, I'd love to go out with you sometime. And she says, oh, you would? Oh, I think you're fantastic, and you have a nice car. And then they decide they're going to go out for a little date, and they're going to go and they're going to go and have a nice car. It's important, I guess. And so they're going to go out and have a good time. And they begin on that first date to deposit love into the other's account. And in that first date, they're just talking about things that might impress the other person. And by the end of that date, hopefully both have deposited enough love to where they want to see one another again. Why? Because when I was with that person, I really began to like that person because they deposited all sorts of love into my account. And I just think that this is a good thing. And so here's the idea. Let's go on to number two, love units. Let's talk about love units. Let's talk about love units. Now, you see the chart down here. This is important to see. We see the chart down here. We see on the chart, let's just say that these are the numbers. Number one, this is something that leaves me feeling comfortable. So let's say we're talking about Joe again. And Joe starts coming to the church. He's a member now. And every time Joe walks by, he kind of gives you a smile. He's like, hey. And he kind of walks by. Now, you're not overwhelmed by that. You're not saying, oh, my goodness, this guy is incredible. I think he's fantastic. No, but Joe just kind of walks by and he says, hey. You think, oh, that's comfortable. And you kind of like Joe because he's nice. All right. Number two, he leaves me feeling good. Maybe Joe stops by and he says, hey, how you doing? And, I was thinking about you this week. I don't know why, but I just felt like praying for you, so I prayed for you. Oh. Joe? I like Joe. Joe's a nice guy. You see how love banks can be for anybody? Can be for anybody. Number three, it leaves me feeling very good. Joe comes by and he says, not only have I been praying for you, but I want something specific to pray for. Is there something specific that I could be praying for you about? Oh, yeah, truthfully, the honest thing is, financially, we're not doing really great right now. I just lost my job and I really need a job. Can you pray for my job? Joe says, I promise, I'm going to pray for your job. Now you feel really good about Joe. And number four, a great experience, a great memory. Maybe Joe says to you, you know what, why don't we go into this back room and we're going to have a word of prayer. And he pulls you in the back room and you kneel down and you begin to pray, dear God, please give this man his job back. Dear God, I'm beseeching you. I'm praying for this man. And you know what? You leave that saying, that was a great memory. I got to have a great time of prayer. That's a great experience. Now, the opposite is also the case. Now, every time Joe sees you, he's depositing love units into your account. And every time Joe sees you and he does something good. But eventually, Joe may change and Joe may begin to withdraw accounts. Now, many relationships start with depositing love. And so we're going to talk about that numbers, letter C here, a love bank story. A love bank story. A love bank story. I think let's see here. Yeah, there we are. Love bank story. And I say John and Mary. What's that? Oh, okay, yeah, John and Mary. By the way, let's make this clear. This is not John and Mary Brenniger, okay? I'm about to talk about Noreen who breaks the marriage up. John and Mary, they're doing fine. There is no Noreen. If your name is Noreen in this room, I'm not talking about you. Okay? Thank you. John sees Mary and he's just infatuated. I mean, that in love experience, that feeling of infatuation just really begins to grab hold. And he's thinking, wow, if I could get her to go out with me, I'm going to be a happy guy. So he does. He gets her to go out. Promises her the world, you know. I'm going to take you over to the Outback. I'm going to get you a big piece of meat and a potato and one of the blooming onions, and we're going to have a good time. Would you like to go? And afterward, I'll even take you to the matinee. We'll have a little good time watching a movie together. And so sure enough, they do. And the experience overall leaves Mary feeling like, wow, that was really good. In fact, that was probably one of the best first dates I've ever had. And she's thinking, that's fantastic. Then John's thinking the same thing. That was a really good experience. I'm going to ask her out again. Sure enough, John asks her out again. Mary accepts rapidly, and they begin to date. Every time they date, it wasn't just a comfortable experience. It was an overwhelming, great memory. And so every time they meet and every time they get together, they're depositing 4 and 5 and 6 love units into that person's account until eventually the love bank overflows to the point where the guy says, I am in love with you. He confesses his love. And she says, well, I'm in love with you too. What is she saying? You have deposited so much love into my account, I just can't help but think about you night and day. I am in love with you. You make me feel so good. And then they decide to get married. And after marriage, their honeymoon continues. They continue to deposit love notes into each other's account. But eventually what happens is something bad can occur. Something bad can occur, as simple as he doesn't put the toilet seat in the correct position. Or she wakes up and she is belching in the bathroom or whatever it might be. Okay. These are not horrible experiences, but they are uncomfortable experiences. But you're thinking, hey, it's no big deal that he didn't put the toilet seat down. It's no big deal that I didn't know she ever belched. I don't know women belch, and here she's belching. Okay. And so these are uncomfortable experiences, but it's not enough to be a deal breaker. It's not enough to actually cause a divorce. And the reason is because your love account has tens of thousands of love units in it. And so they may take away 2 or 3 at a time. It's really not that big of a deal in comparison to the amount of love they've already built up, you see. I mean, something may horrible happen one day. Maybe he comes home and he's upset about things at work, and he comes home and he unloads his anger and frustration on his wife. I mean, he says, and he doesn't even talk about the problems. He just talks about how bad she is. And he's unloading his frustration, his anger, and his depression upon her. And it's making him feel better to get it off of his chest. But now she feels horrible. Now, it takes her a couple hours or a couple days to get over it. He finally comes back and apologizes. And he has really withdrawn a lot of love units, perhaps 20, 30, I don't know. But withdrawn a lot of love units from her account. But it's still okay. Because he spent years building that account to where it is today. So he can take a withdrawal every now and then and not ruin the relationship. The problem with divorces come in, or how divorces come in, is when a man or a woman gets to the point where they've had more withdrawals than they've had deposits. Where they've spent too many years where the person hasn't been placing love units in. All they've been doing is pulling love units out, and so this is a major problem. One of the best illustrations I can give of this, how many of you have seen that new movie, Fireproof? Have you seen this movie? Okay. And I recommend this movie. I don't know what you may think about it, or movies in general. I really liked the movie. I thought it was wonderful. And in this movie, there's a story about a man who spent years in his relationship withdrawing love. I mean, he was a jerk, and he yelled and he screamed, and he was how many remember this? He's a bad husband. I mean, he was doing all sorts of things, looking at internet pornography and being a jerk to his wife and all, and really pulling love units out. And then he decided he wanted to save the marriage. Now, he had already been withdrawn for probably years or perhaps months, and he thought he wanted to save the marriage. So the way he was going to save the marriage was start by giving her a couple flowers, and maybe that would help everything, you see. And then he decided he was going to write her a little note or call her in the middle of the day, as if that was going to save anything. But the truth is that wasn't going to really help ultimately, because he had withdrawn so much, a couple measly deposits really wasn't going to do it. It had to take a great effort for a long period of time and many units to actually build that account up to where it needed to be once again. Does that make sense? Just like a bank account. All right. This is the premise of his needs, her needs. Should I be concerned about my spouse having an affair if I don't meet their needs? And the answer to that question is yes. Yes, you should be concerned. So you say, well, then what do I do? What do I do to keep an affair from happening? What you do is you need to meet the emotional needs of your spouse. Let's talk about these basic 10 needs. Number one, the first thing that she can't do without. The first thing that she can't do without. The first thing she can't do without is affection. Affection is the first thing she can't do without. This is her first major need. Affection. A woman has the need to be of affection. My grandfather says a man needs admiration and a woman needs affection. A man needs to be looked up to. A man needs to be praised. A woman needs affection. A woman needs to be taken care of, put an arm around her. And this is the idea. And suppose here's a woman and her husband has withdrawn physically from her. Now, he wants to still have sex because sex is a desire and a natural need. And so he still desires sex with his wife. But emotionally, he doesn't connect with affection. He doesn't go to her and he doesn't share himself affectionately. He never holds her hand anymore. He never holds the door open for her anymore. He doesn't show affection in that way. Well, he just isn't that kind of a guy, perhaps whatever it might be. But then she goes and she goes to perhaps she goes to work or perhaps she's at church and she meets somebody who is a hugger. Have you ever met these huggers? You met these guys? I mean, they just hug everybody. And you can't hate them for it because, you know, they love, you know, that's the way they show love. They're just hugging everybody. Every man in the church, they hug. Every woman in the church, they're going around hugging people. And I don't want to be a hugger because I realize I'm wise enough to realize that some people need physical affection enough to where if you hug that person, they may begin feeling inappropriate feelings toward you. So I advise you to be wise enough not to be the hugger. But you meet these people, don't you? And here's this hugger. He's going around. He's hugging everybody. And Sunday comes and she comes to church. And here's this guy, big old bear. And she gives, it's so good to see you today, sweetheart. And, you know, honestly, she didn't mean anything by this at all. But it really, really felt good to be hugged. She hasn't been hugged like that in a long time from her husband. She hasn't had these kind of hugs since her parents passed away. And now she begins to feel this love toward this man. It's not necessarily that she wants to be adulterous at all. It's just that she hasn't had affection for so long. And this guy came and deposited a great amount of love notes into her account just because of the hug. And then she gets to the point where she goes to church the next week and she's almost looking forward to seeing the guy. She sees him and she sees him coming. And she says, well, hey, brother. And she comes in. It's good to see you, sweetheart. Gives her a big hug. No, nothing sexual. She's not thinking any sort of a wicked sin. She's just feeling affection. But eventually, the emotional needs turn into sexual needs. And she begins finding herself in need of affection. My friend, my dear friend, sir, if you're not showing affection to your spouse, then you are headed toward an affair. Number one, we see affection is the cement of a relationship. It holds it together. Affection is the cement of a relationship. It holds it together. Affection symbolizes security, Affection symbolizes security, protection, comfort, and approval. Affection symbolizes security, protection, comfort, and approval. Now, let's talk about all these things. When you show affection to your spouse, when you grab their hand, you are saying, hey, it's okay, I'm here with you. Why is that the case? Because we can remember all the way back from our early childhood when our parents would grab our hand to make sure we crossed the street. We make sure if there's any dangerous situation, our parents would put our arm around us. And so we associate this idea of affection with care. And so whenever your spouse is in need of affection, they're in need of you showing them that you care about them. Putting your arm around them, you say, I'm here to protect you. You grab them by the hand, I'm here because I love you. It also shows comfort in a time of pain or approval. You don't really touch somebody that you don't approve of. And when you do touch, it is something that is very helpful. It says, I will take care of you and protect you. You are important to me. I don't want anything to happen to you. This says, I am concerned about the problems you face. I am with you. I am behind you. This says, I think you've done a good job and I'm so proud of you. That's what this affection does. And sir, she needs that. This is a primary need of the wife. Now, you may have put affection very high on your list of priorities, but more likely than not, the majority of women in this room put affection as one of the top five of their greatest needs. And so this is a great need. Seven ways to show affection. Let's talk about seven ways to show affection. Seven ways to show affection. Number one, with a hug. You show affection with a hug. My wife and I have a little joke at our house, and the reason is because it seems like I need a hug or she needs a hug at the wrong time. See what I mean? You know, things might be really, really busy. We're on our way somewhere and all of a sudden somebody needs a hug. My wife will stand there. She'll say, I just need a hug. And I'm standing there ready to walk out the door, you know. Now, I'm normally running 20, 30 minutes early, so I'm okay. I can take time for the hug. That's no problem. But there's the occasional time where I might be running a little bit late. And she says, you know, it just happens to be, I need a hug. And, you know, it's hard. Put my briefcase down. I walk over and I, you know, grab the hug that I need. And you know, we have to consciously show that affection. And that is a good way. And there are times that I say, honey, I just need a hug. And she's looking at me. I'm making dinner. I'm changing the baby. And she's doing all this at the same time. It's incredible what women can do, right? But I need a hug. And so this is a good way to show affection. Number two, love notes. Love notes. One of the ways, sir, that you can show affection to your wife is just a love note. And leaving it on the counter where she can see it. Or leaving it wherever she might see that. Just put that love note and let her know. It doesn't have to be a long, drawn out, emotionally deep, sensitive thing. It could just be a little note that says, I love you and I've been thinking about you today. Last night was wonderful. You are a great wife. And so this is important. Let's move on. Flowers, open doors, back rubs, phone calls. And lastly, you can fill in the blank, whatever you think is appropriate there. What's a way that you can show affection? I want you to think about a way that you can show affection to your wife. Let her be. She knows I'm not the affectionate type. Somebody might say, well, but she knows that I am not the affectionate type. She knows I'm not the affectionate type. And I heard of a guy one day in counseling who said this. He said, I'm not the affectionate type, and I've never been the affectionate type, and I'm not going to start now. You know, and well, that's kind of a foolish thing. It's like a salesperson. It's like a salesperson who says, well, I'm not the friendly type. You know, you're trying to buy a car from a salesman, and the salesman looks at you, and he says, I want you to buy this car. And you're thinking, okay. He said, no, buy the car now. You think I'm kidding with you? The salesman doesn't want to be friendly. He says, I'm not going to be friendly. I don't need to be friendly. Just sign on the dotted line. This is like the man who says, I need sex, but I'm not going to be affectionate about it. I'm not the affectionate type. I just need sex. All right. Well, you're not going to get the sale. You see, they go together. When it comes to sex and affection, you can't have one without the other. Number three, a man can learn to be affectionate. A man can learn to be affectionate. Any man can learn to be affectionate. Okay, there you go. And number one, she may think showing affection is a natural outcome of love. Now, this is true. She may think that showing affection is the natural outcome of love, and it may not necessarily be for you, sir. The natural outflow of love for you may be some other form that you may show that love. We talked about the love languages, but she may be thinking that it's the natural outflow of love, and so it's important. It's important to help there. Let's go on. She may think that you have sex on the mind and devised a plan for sex. Now, you know, you begin showing affection to your wife because you're learning these principles, and you begin saying, I need to, and you grab her hand, you put your arm around her. Now, she may be thinking that you have ulterior motives. And quite frankly, you may have ulterior motives. But you need to learn these habits. Number one, you need to hug and kiss your wife every morning while you're still in bed. And don't rush out. Hug and kiss your wife every morning while you're still in bed. Number two, tell her you love her while having breakfast together if you can. Number three, kiss her before you leave for work. Number four, call her during the day and see how she is doing. Number five, gifts for special occasions. And we're talking about sentimental, not practical. Sweetheart, I know it's our anniversary. I got you these pans. You need to get dinner started soon because talk with your wife after work. Help with the dishes after dinner. Hug and kiss your wife every night before going to bed. Show these things. Now, sex begins with affection. Sex begins with affection. Sex begins with affection. And here's the dilemma that we face, and this is where I wanted to get to before we close. The dilemma is this. Without affection, she does not feel sexual. Without affection, she does not feel sexual. And without sex, he does not feel affectionate. There's the dilemma. Without affection, she doesn't feel like having sex. And with him, without sex, he doesn't feel like being affectionate. And so the man thinks, well, if she has sex with me, I'll be affectionate. And the woman thinks, if he'd be affectionate, I'll have sex. And so we begin to separate from one another. We begin to fall apart. What's the solution? The solution is this. The solution is that someone must break the cycle. Someone's got to say, all right, I don't care if I get affection, I'm going to still love him and give him sex. Or the man needs to say, I don't care if she gives me sex, I'm just going to show her affection because it's the right thing to do. And when somebody shows that, breaks that cycle, the affection will begin to flow. Number two, men must learn sexless affection. And you can do this. Men must learn sexless affection. Showing affection without assuming sex is going to be there. You can do this. I don't know how many times maybe you've done this, but you can do this. You did it perhaps when you were dating. You weren't assuming that there would be sex right after, but you were affectionate. You opened the door, you held her hand, and you need to bring that back. Number three, what happened to him or after we got married? It may be that she stopped showing him or he stopped showing her the affection they need. Number four, understand that the main event is different for each of you. When it comes to sexual relationship, the main event is different for each of you. Number five, creating the right environment for great sex. Creating the right environment for sex. I know I'm rushing here, but creating the right environment for sex. This is why, and number six there, spontaneous affection. This is why, and we'll close with this. This is why adulterous affairs seem so passionate. And the reason is because they create the right environment for sex. You know, we're going to meet at this place at this time. Nobody's going to be around. It's so exciting. And the passion, it's not that affairs are passionate. It's that affairs are just planned well, you see. And you're thinking about all day, and we're going to know what we're going to do. And there's this planning and preparation, and this excitement of what's going to happen. And you can have the same thing in your marriage relationship as long as you prepare and plan. Spontaneous affection is the opposite side of that. Spontaneous affection is just to love at all times and be spontaneous about that. We don't have time to get in the next one. We'll get in the next one in the next 5 minutes. You're dismissed.